Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for September the 21st, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey. My co-host Richard Hurley is away on business, so he'll be back next week. This evening we have lots of news of interest to veterans and their families, so stay tuned. As our loyal listeners already know, but I'd like to tell our new listeners, this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, your comments, and your questions, so you can call us anytime during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Let me give you that number again. This is a toll-free call-in nationwide number. It's 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. Now, the first item of our many news segments this evening is going to deal with an issue we've covered many times over the past 3 years. It concerns the effects of open-air burn pits, which were used in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other areas overseas, and which many consider the source of many serious and even, in some cases, fatal health effects on U.S. service members. As I said, we've been reporting this issue for about 3 years. One of our stories in September of 2017 concerned a film, a documentary, which had just been released. It was called Delay, Deny, Hope, You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. It was a film by producer Greg Lovett, who produced the film after many interviews and basically had been inspired by a book of the same title. And the film documented through interviews and other evidence the effects, the harmful health effects of the contamination caused by these open-air burn pits. Now, for those of you that may not be familiar with those, these open-air burn pits were used extensively by U.S. forces in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other countries, but primarily Iraq and Afghanistan. And I realize many people think, well, there's wars going on. Of course, the troops have to dispose of waste, and they'll often do that by burning. We're talking about open burn pits that were used at some of the largest installations, some of the largest military posts, which essentially were the sizes of small cities, which were essentially running well into the war once things had been settled and established. So you basically had an organized city in many instances using open-air burn pits that were sometimes as large as several football fields, and they contained every imaginable kind of waste and toxic substance thrown into these pits and then ignited with jet fuel, and they'd burn 24 hours a day, often in very close proximity to U.S. troops. And to help you visualize this, again, if you get a chance to watch that documentary, which is called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers, the visuals in that film will give you a really good idea of what that was like. In some of the footage, you can see the clouds of smoke, which were so extensive and pervasive, it basically hung over the ground like fog, but it wasn't fog. And troops would breathe this in. They had no choice, obviously, 24 hours a day as they lived and worked nearby. And these were healthy young men and women that were serving over there and return home and develop all sorts of unusual and severe respiratory and other types of illnesses, including certain cancers. Well, that's the background. In recent news, this past week, on September the 14th, Louisiana-based Military Veterans Advocacy, or MVA, expressed disappointment at the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine, or NASEM, report released on September the 11th of this year. That report was commissioned by the Department of Veterans Affairs to determine if there was an association between the airborne hazards from those open-air burn pits in Southwest Asia and certain cancers as well as respiratory diseases. That report identified 27 potential diseases suffered by veterans that might be associated with those airborne hazards. The findings of the report, however, failed to find a positive association between the airborne hazards of open-air burn pits and any of those illnesses. So Military Veterans Advocacy, the chairman, John B. Wells, U.S. Navy retired, who's been a guest on our show many times over the last couple years, he questioned the conclusions of that report, and he said, and I quote, "It is inconceivable to me that we can send 30-somethings in great physical condition to Iraq and Afghanistan, have them return with breathing difficulties, and dismiss airborne hazards from burn pits as the cause," unquote. Commander Wells questioned the scientific approach of the committee, noting it did not quantify whether Southwest Asia veterans had a higher level of disease incidence than those who did not deploy or the general public. He also noted that there was no rational attempt to eliminate other causes. As Commander Wells said, and I quote, "NASAM tried to blame cigarette smoking as a possible cause of these illnesses, but that is just speculation. In 2018, the FDA noted that only 21.6% of veterans are smokers, which is lower than the population at large. The committee did not determine whether those suffering from diseases were smokers. The unanswered question," Commander Wells said, "was whether the airborne particles found in the smoke from burn pits was sufficient to trigger these diseases. We believe the answer to that question is a resounding yes." The NASAM report did recommend further studies, so that's a positive note, and it did find limited association with chronic persistent cough, shortness of breath, and or wheezing. However, this criteria is probably not sufficient to meet the VA standards of coverage for disability compensation. Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York have introduced legislation to address this issue. Whether that legislation will pass, whether it will actually correct these issues, of course, remains to be seen. As Commander Wells said, Military Veterans Advocacy Organization supports the bills of both those legislators. As he said also, burn pits are the Agent Orange of the 21st century. We need to provide coverage for these victims now, unquote. You can learn more about this by going to the organization's website, which is militaryveteransadvocacy.org. That's militaryveteransadvocacy.org. And I would add to that that we've had other guests on our show over the last 3 years, including Lauren Price of Veteran Warriors, and others that have discussed this burn pit issue from both the firsthand, but also from a research and legislation perspective. The VA does have a burn pits registry, but there are, according to Lauren Price and others, many flaws to that. But in any event, it appears, in my opinion, that much more attention needs to be done, as you will have noted, we've been covering this story for the last 3 years, although it's been around much longer than that. And in 3 years, very little progress has been made in Congress. It's very slow. And you could say, Commander Wells compared the burn pit illnesses as being the Agent Orange of the 21st century, referring to the fact that Vietnam veterans were affected by the Agent Orange defoliant used to essentially destroy the jungles of Vietnam. Well, these burn pits weren't used to destroy any jungles. They weren't used to burn out the jungles. They were used to dispose all the waste generated by the troops, and sometimes at posts as large as 40 or 50,000 troops, generating a lot of tons of waste every single day. And those burn pits would clearly be outlawed if they were done in the United States. And the question now is, what will the VA do when these formerly healthy service members, they return home, they get gravely ill, some either have already died from cancers. What will the VA do to recognize that? Or will it be a situation like the Agent Orange issue, where it took decades before the laws finally reflected that? So Again, if you want more information about this, see what Military Veterans Advocacy and other organizations are doing. Check them out. Now, we have other news in our next segment of news of interest to veterans and their families this evening. The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs announced this past Wednesday, September the 16th, its commitment to extend debt relief to veterans adversely impacted by natural disasters. The VA recognizes that veterans and their beneficiaries are negatively impacted by the wildfires and hurricanes that recently have been affecting many states in our country. And the department has then extended an offer of financial debt relief. Veterans and their families should be focused on their health and safety during the natural disaster, said VA Secretary Robert Wilkie. He also said the VA is taking action to give those with pending debts greater flexibility during these challenging times. This includes the suspension of debt collection for up to 90 days or extending repayment terms on pre-existing VA debts, whichever the veteran prefers. To request assistance for VA financial debt relief, veterans should contact the VA Debt Management Center at the following number. That's 1-800-827-0648. So veterans that believe they've been affected by any of the natural disasters, whether it's wildfires or the hurricanes, and because of that they've been affected and they need some assistance in terms of relief from debts they might owe to the VA, again, contact the VA Debt Management Center at 1-800-827-0648. That's good news. In other news, as we reported in prior shows, the success of the telehealth services during the COVID-19 pandemic. In recent news, the VA announced its plans to further expand the telehealth program access for veterans. The VA announced this past week on September the 15th a new collaboration with Apple to increase veterans' access to virtual care benefits. The VA's iPad program provides qualifying veterans with cellular-enabled iPads to access telehealth services and currently helps more than 50,000 veterans across the country connect to VA health care services virtually. As VA Secretary Robert Wilkie said in the press release, quote, the VA will continue working diligently to provide veterans with the tools and resources necessary to access quality health care when and where they need it. VA's partnership with Apple is an integral step in helping to bridge the digital divide for veterans everywhere. This is particularly critical during the COVID-19 public health emergency, when telehealth is being leveraged to protect the safety and well-being of both our veterans and clinicians, unquote. Now, the VA has been a leader in telehealth services for decades and began the Connected Tablet program in 2016. A VA study found that veterans who received these tablets reported high levels of satisfaction with their medical care, were less likely to miss appointments, and found it easier and more convenient to access VA care. Now, to standardize the program and provide veterans a consistent quality experience, VA will exclusively distribute iPads to veterans. iPads offer veterans the combination of portability, user experience, data privacy, and security made possible through Apple's integrated hardware and software platform. As part of the VA's commitment to supporting veteran health care, patients can also securely view and download their personal medical data using the health records on iPhone feature from Apple. Veterans who don't currently have a video-capable device or internet service and are interested in the VA's telehealth iPad program should consult their VA healthcare team to determine their eligibility. In other words, contact your local VA outpatient clinic or medical center and let them know that you're interested in accessing the VA telehealth iPad program, that you don't have already a video-capable device or internet service for whatever reason, and see if they can help you. So that's another development. The VA has really tried to expand to make healthcare more accessible, which is all the more important during, as Secretary Wilkie said, during this COVID-19 public health emergency, when there's been a lot of social distancing. I've talked to many veterans who've had many medical appointments, in-person appointments, canceled, delayed, rescheduled, and this program is a good way to sort of make up for that. Well, if you're just tuned in, you're listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1. If you have anything you'd like to discuss related to military veteran issues, our toll-free call-in number nationwide is 1-888-627-6008. Again, toll-free call-in number 1-888-627-6008. Let's go to more news, because we have a lot of it this evening. The VA announced this past week, September 14th, that it recently awarded $1.3 million in grants to 11 regional homelessness nonprofit organizations to bolster suicide prevention services for veterans who are experiencing or at risk of homelessness. The VA's combined public health approach to preventing suicide and addressing homelessness aims to improve the identification of veterans in need within the community, increase veteran and community awareness of suicide risk and protective factors, and also increase veterans' connectedness to community and care resources. In other words, there are a lot of resources out there, and the first step is to make sure veterans are aware of those. So the VA is awarding, or has recently awarded, $1.3 million to 11 different regional homelessness nonprofit organizations. As Secretary Robert Wilkie said in the press release, I quote, "Our data shows veterans are at a particular risk for suicide within 30 days of an eviction or the onset of homelessness, especially when it is paired with other risk factors such as financial instability and difficulty meeting basic needs. In response, VA is working hard during this challenging time to ensure veterans who are experiencing or at risk of homelessness have the support they need," unquote. Now, the funds awarded will be managed and dispersed by the VA's Supportive Services for Veterans Family Program, SSVF, which offers an array of services to secure housing for veterans facing homelessness. Additionally, the Veterans Supportive Services for Veterans Family Program will provide supportive services, including rapid rehousing and homelessness prevention support, to veterans who are identified as being an elevated risk of suicide, as well as veterans facing extraordinary challenges during this COVID-19 pandemic because of loss of employment and unstable finances. So this is another excellent program. The grantees awarded recently have included organizations in Arizona, California, Colorado, Florida, Indiana, Kentucky, Louisiana, Nevada, and Texas, states with collectively the highest, very large populations of veterans. So that's another positive program the VA is taking to try to help veterans who are homeless or at risk of being homeless, and hopefully all those dollars will translate into an effective, positive outcome. Let's move into other news on a related topic. We've reported in previous shows various VA programs to address the issues of mental illness and suicide prevention. Well, the VA announced on September the 10th that the President's Roadmap to Empower Veterans and End a National Tragedy of Suicide Office, that acronym for that program is PREVENTS, by the way, VA announced that 42 states and one U.S. territory have signed the PREVENTS State Proclamation pledging their prioritization of suicide prevention for veterans and all citizens in their jurisdiction. Each state is pledging promises to promote and amplify the REACH public health campaign and encourages everyone to reach out to those who are vulnerable and to reach out when they themselves are in need of help. As part of the implementation of the President's Roadmap, the PREVENTS Office is meeting with state and community leaders in all 50 states and territories to ensure best practices for suicide prevention are identified and applied. Efforts are coordinated within the state and federal government, and the public health messages are promoted before the initiative concludes in March of 2022. As VA Secretary Robert Wilkie said, and I quote, "With the commitment of our nation's governors, this undertaking has moved beyond an idea to reality, as it is only viable when the governors enlist the full authority and backing of their state to combat this crisis." September is National Suicide Prevention Month. And through the outpouring of support echoed by governors issuing state proclamations, their efforts assist with meeting the requirements of the President's White House Task Force for PREVENTS, which provides the nation with an essential collaborative forum to address this national crisis through local and stay focused solutions to help us end suicide, veteran suicide. Now, of course, this problem is certainly not limited to military veterans by any means. And the president's roadmap program certainly is intended to address it on a nationwide level. Now, to engage all the states, all 50 states and five U.S. territories, the Prevents Office has developed a state proclamation for governors codifying their full commitment to preventing suicide in their states with a special focus on high-risk communities, which includes veterans, but not limited to veterans. The office is working with key community leaders, including veteran service organizations, military service organizations, business leaders, academic institutions, and faith-based communities, among others. And they're holding in-person visits, and they have in many states, and virtual visits and in others. As Prevents Executive Director Barbara Van Dalen, Ph.D., said, and I quote, "Collaborating with state and community leaders to advance the mission of suicide prevention for veterans and all Americans is imperative. As we move forward to change the culture around mental health in general and suicide in particular, we will continue to elevate and amplify the great works our states are doing as we leverage lessons learned and best practices to accelerate our efforts to heal families and save lives." The Prevents was established by an executive order in March of 2019, and the roadmap was released in June of 2020. And again, the program is basically, its purpose is to create a collaboration among federal and state authorities, governments, to prevent suicide through national public health campaign, enhance community integration, prioritize research and implementation strategies, and emphasize improved overall health and well-being. So we'll see how that translates, and hopefully, this extensive program will actually benefit people and reach out, provide the resources that are helpful. So we've got more news segments for this evening. But before we do that, again, I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBSRadio.com. Our nationwide call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. I invite you to call in if there's any topics you'd like to discuss. Might be of interest to veterans or their families. Call in and let's chat about those. All right, let's go to our next news segment. The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs announced on September the 14th that there was a significant data breach involving the personal information of approximately 46,000 veterans and actions taken by the department to prevent and mitigate any potential loss to those 46,000 veterans. The VA's Financial Services Center determined that one of its online applications was accessed by unauthorized users to divert payments to community health care providers for the medical treatment of veterans. So the VA's Financial Services Center took the application offline and reported the breach to the VA's privacy office. A preliminary review indicates these unauthorized users gain access to the application to change financial information and divert payments from the VA by using social engineering techniques and exploiting authentication protocols. So basically, we've got some hackers trying to rip off the government, but they were the breach was detected. And to prevent any future improper access and the modification of information, system access will not be re-enabled until a comprehensive security review is completed by the VA Office of Information Technology. So, the news for veterans is the VA is alerting the affected individuals, approximately 46,000 veterans, including next of kin of those veterans who are deceased, of the potential risk to their personal information. The VA is also offering access to credit monitoring services at no cost to those whose Social Security numbers may have been compromised. That's one way to help catch instances of identity theft. Now, veterans whose information was involved are advised to follow the instructions in the letter that they will be receiving in order to protect their data. There's no action needed from veterans if they did not receive an alert by mail, as their personal information was not involved in the incident. Veterans or veteran next of kin will receive notification whether their information is potentially at risk by this, from this incident. And as I say, if they have questions, they can direct those to the VA. The VA's Financial Services Center customer help desk can be reached via email. I'll give you their email address here in a moment. You can also contact them by mail. So if you have questions, first, you should be receiving notification if you're among the 46,000 veterans affected by this security breach. And if you have questions, the customer help desk, the email address is vafscveteranssupport@va.gov. Again, the email address is vafscveteranssupport@va.gov. And their mailing address is VAFSC, which stands for Financial Services Center, the Help Desk, Attention Customer Engagement Center, P.O. Box 149971, Austin, Texas. Let me give that to you again. If you have questions and you want to write the VA Financial Services Center, address it to Customer Engagement Center, P.O. Box 149971, Austin, Texas. 78714-9971. Hopefully you won't be one of those affected by this data breach, but if you are, it sounds like the VA is somewhat on top of the situation, and you should be hearing from them. Okay, on to other news. And this deals with some positive news from the VA. A September 8th VA press release stated that a recently published study shows veterans receiving outpatient care from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs healthcare facilities or community providers within the VA network are pleased with their experience overall. The study, called The Veterans Experience with Outpatient Care, Comparing the Veterans Affairs System with Community-Based Care, compared survey responses from more than 1 million veterans who received outpatient care from VA facilities or from private providers within the VA's Choice Act network, and found most rated their experiences highly. The authors of the study, led by Megan Vanneman, PhD, a research scientist at VA Salt Lake City Healthcare Systems Informatics Decision Enhancement and Analytics Science Center, and the University of Utah School of Medicine, say the results are consistent with past studies showing where VA generally matches or outperforms care delivered in the private sector. According to VA Secretary Robert Wilkie, and I quote, "Veterans now have increased options for where they get their medical care, and VA is working to ensure they have a positive experience regardless of where that care is delivered. This study helps affirm the quality of VA care and also suggests community providers are doing a good job of meeting veterans' needs," and I quote. Now, while the results of this survey analyzed the veterans' experiences prior to the enactment of the 2008 so-called Mission Act passed by Congress, which stands for Maintaining Internal Systems and Strengthening Integrated Outside Network Acts, the study authors say that veteran-reported experiences of VA and community care continue to be important indicators of healthcare quality and merit attention from researchers. Recently, a veteran signal survey found VA's trust at an all-time high. A Veteran of Foreign Wars, a VFW survey of nearly 7,000 VFW members, found that more than 9 in 10 respondents would recommend VA care to other veterans. Studies in the medical literature have also validated VA's quality regarding wait time and overall excellence, including reports from outside organizations such as the RAND Corporation and Dartmouth. This is good news because as our listeners may recall, back in approximately 2014, there was significant media coverage of a scandal in the VA healthcare system. First, we reported from the Phoenix VA hospital, where veterans were not receiving timely care. And then to compound that problem, apparently some of the VA statistics about wait times for cares have been falsified to make it appear veterans were not having to wait nearly as long as they were for care, with the tragedy that some veterans passed away before receiving the treatment that they needed. So, significant improvements because of attention by Congress and VA officials in the last 6 years, and these studies appear to support the feeling that many veterans have more trust in the VA healthcare system. All right, before we go to our next news, again, just a reminder, you're listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBSRadio.com. If you have any questions or comments, our toll-free nationwide call-in number, 1-888-627-6008. Again, that's 1-888-627-6008. In other news affecting veterans, according to a September 16th article on military.com, the Army is proposing limiting the number of burials at Arlington National Cemetery, and military retirees may be the first to be affected. A proposed rule published in the Federal Register on September the 15th, 2020, seeks public comment on limiting interments, both burials and inurnments, in Arlington National Cemetery to only those who are retired, saw combat, received certain military awards, served as president or vice president, or family members of otherwise qualified individuals. An inurnment is the placing of a deceased person's cremated remains in an above-ground columbarium or wall, and a burial is the placement of a body or ashes into the ground. Just thought I'd preface some definitions here for you, because that's important to understand what the Army is proposing to do with Arlington National Cemetery. An interment refers to either act, either an inurnment of cremated remains or a burial. Now, there are different rules for who can be buried and who can be inurned in the cemetery. Generally, the rules for burial are stricter. In other words, it's tougher to qualify. The military retirees and veterans would no longer be eligible for burial at Arlington unless they saw combat and received the Silver Star or above. Those who died on active duty would not be eligible for burial unless their death was related to combat or combat support. So this is a significant change. For any veteran who is eligible to be interred at Arlington National Cemetery, they would not, they may not have received a dishonorable discharge or been convicted of certain crimes. That's another disqualifier. So what's the background of this? Who is currently eligible for interment at Arlington National Cemetery? Currently, any service member who dies on active duty, former prisoner of war, highly decorated military member, or retiree is eligible for burial in Arlington. Reservists or guard members who died on active duty for training, and all veterans are eligible for inurnment, which is basically the placement of cremated remains in an above-ground columbarium or a wall. So different rules depending on whether there'll be a burial or an inurnment of cremated remains. Now, under this proposed rule, who will be eligible? Well, eligibility for burial at Arlington under the proposed rule will be limited to service members killed in action, service members whose death resulted from preparations or operations related to combat, any service member or veteran who served in combat and was awarded the Purple Heart, Silver Star, or above, U.S. presidents or vice presidents, former POWs, and qualifying family members of any of the above eligible individuals. Those eligible for inurnment, again, which means the placing of a deceased person's cremated remains either in an above-ground columbarium or a wall, would include anyone eligible for burial, as well as military retirees and those eligible for retirement, veterans or service members with at least 24 months active duty with qualifying combat service, some World War II and Korean War veterans, and qualifying family members. So very complicated. I know you probably have not been taking notes of these detailed rules, but the reason I wanted to mention this was to alert you of the fact that the rules for eligibility may be changing. As the Army, which oversees Arlington, they've published proposed changes, and now there is a public comment period where you can offer your comments. And the proposed rule was published in the Federal Register on September the 15th. That was just 6 days ago. And in case you're interested, you can go to the website regulations.gov, and in the search engine, You know, you can search for the regulations dealing with Arlington National Cemetery. Again, the proposed rule was published September the 15th, and you can submit comments online if you wish, if that's most convenient. Now, you may be asking yourself, well, why is this change even necessary? You know, Arlington is such a big cemetery. Well, it's true, but it's still running out of space. Without these changes, the Army says that the cemetery will run out of space for new interments by 2041, even if it expanded the size of the cemetery. So that's the short answer of why this is being changed. They're restricting eligibility to those that I've already mentioned. According to the VA, restricting the eligibility of active duty members for burial to those who were killed in combat or combat-related operations would affect approximately 43 service members each year. I don't know how they come up with that number, because they have no idea what wars we may be engaged in or the casualties of war. But that's what they predict. And, you know, we can all be skeptical of statistics. But in any event, the more important point left from this news story is that, you know, I know some veterans, they plan, they have funeral plans, and they may include designating Arlington. They need to be aware that the criteria might affect them. So, in any event, let's move on to more positive news here. Before we do that, again, you're listening to the Veterans News Hour here on bbsradio.com. If you want to call in and chat about anything of interest to veterans and their families, our toll-free nationwide call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Again, 1-888-627-6008. In our next segment here, let's talk about jobs. The VA is always looking for skilled and dedicated people to join the VA workforce. VA is a big organization. Second to the Department of Defense, it's the second largest federal agency. And in good news for the VA and its job recruiting, Forbes magazine has named the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs as one of America's best employers in 17 states, in its second annual survey of America's best employers listed by state. According to the survey, VA is a top-ranked employer in these 17 states: Arizona, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kentucky, Massachusetts, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, Ohio, Rhode Island, South Dakota, Tennessee, Utah, and West Virginia. VA was ranked as a top 10 employer of five of those states: Iowa, Kentucky, Montana, Rhode Island, and South Dakota. According to VA Secretary Robert Wilkie, who's very proud of this information, he says, and I quote, "These survey results are the latest proof that we are turning this department around. Listening to our employees helps us deliver better customer service to veterans, and it also makes for happier, more motivated staff members," unquote. Now, Forbes magazine's findings underscore similar ones over the last 2 years from the Partnership for Public Service that show the VA has boosted its rating from 17th to 6th among large federal agencies in its annual Best Place to Work survey of federal employees. Now, you may be wondering, well, that's all neat. That's all cool information. What can I do? Where can I find more information? Well, the VA is trying to make that easy, too. So if you're interested in jobs with the VA, and again, VA is a huge organization, they have lots of job openings on the healthcare side, but they also have job openings on the benefit or the other non-healthcare jobs, like in the benefit administration, which deals with disability compensation and many other benefit programs. Go to this website. It's easy to remember. It's va.gov/jobs. So for more information on jobs with the VA, go to va.gov/jobs. So I hope you'll find that useful information. We've talked about some of these issues in past shows, how the VA actually has quite a few in literally thousands of job openings, and most of those are on the healthcare side. They have shortages there's shortages around the country in the private sector as well for many healthcare positions, doctors, nurses, others in the healthcare professions. and that's affected the VA as well. So they have a lot of job openings, but they also have a lot of job openings in other non-healthcare positions. So again, va.gov/jobs. Now we've got about 15 minutes left on our show. I wanted to highlight a couple more issues that are ongoing issues of interest to many veterans that we hear about frequently. And one of those, again, we've reported on this issue before, is the issue of the Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, the water contamination, health issues, and also disability compensation issues. The VA website, va.gov, has a lot of information on this. I'd like to summarize this because this is really an issue that is still affecting many veterans and their families as well. And here's the short version to remind you if you haven't, or to inform you in case you're not familiar. And it's this, that for many years, going back to the 50s and well into the 1980s, at Camp Lejeune or Marine Corps Air Station New River in North Carolina, they had a problem of contamination in the drinking water. They had pollution, significant pollution, including some from off-base businesses, and it contaminated that water for literally decades. And it's been now documented that there have been health, there's been an association between the exposure of those contaminants in the water to certain diseases. So here's the bottom line. If you served at Camp Lejeune or at Marine Corps Air Station New River, North Carolina, you may have had contact with the contaminants, and the coverage period is between August of 1953, which is a real long time ago, but all the way up through December of 1987, which is still a long time ago, but there are many people that that are alive or have been affected by this. And the scientific and medical evidence has shown, as I say, an association between exposure to certain contaminants that were in that drinking water and certain diseases. So the questions that we get from veterans basically are twofold. One deals with what about disability benefits, financial compensation from the VA? That's one. And the other question being, what about health care coverage? Let's talk about the disability benefits. You may be qualified to get disability compensation if you meet certain requirements. First, that you served at Camp Lejeune or Marine Corps Air Station New River for at least 30 cumulative days between any time between August of 1953, which, as a reminder of how long ago that was just after the end of the Korean War. From August of 1953 all the way through December, the end of 1987. So that's near the end of the Reagan administration. So you served at least 30 cumulative days. Now, what does cumulative mean? It means they don't have to be 30 days in a row. You could have served there for, let's say, 14 days, temporary duty for some training, and then returned on another occasion in that same window of time for another 16 days. But you need to at least be able to show that you were there at least 30 cumulative days between August of 53 and December of 87. And second, that you did not receive a dishonorable discharge when you separated from the military. Now, if you did receive a dishonorable discharge, there's a whole other conversation we could have about ways to try to upgrade that to something that wasn't dishonorable, which may eliminate that obstacle, okay? But here's the other element for obtaining disability compensation. You must have a diagnosis of one or more of the following eight conditions, and those include adult leukemia, aplastic anemia and other myelodysplastic syndromes, bladder cancer, kidney cancer, liver cancer, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and Parkinson's disease. So those are eight conditions on this so-called presumptive list. That means that the VA will presume that if you served at Camp Lejeune or Marine Corps Air Station New River for at least 30 days between August of 53, December of 1987, and you develop one of these eight conditions, they will presume that it was caused by your exposure to the contaminated water there. And that presumption is very important because it means you don't have to go out and hire your own medical expert. They will, the regulations will make that link, that connection for you. And who's covered? Service members, including reservists and guardsmen. It's important to emphasize that because we get a lot of questions from those that served in the National Guard or in the Reserve, and they weren't on full-time active duty, but they served at least 30 cumulative days at Lejeune or New River Air Station, and they're eligible as well. And you can get disability compensation. You might ask yourself, well, how much is this compensation? Well, it depends on the severity of the disability. If you have an active cancer going on, then you should be receiving 100% while the cancer is still active. And at some point, typically, you know, 6 months after the treatment ends, they will reevaluate to see if the cancer has gone away. And if it has, they will reassess your rating. It might be less than 100, but they'll reassess it based on the lingering effects, or what they call residual effects, of that condition, of that cancer. So it might change, but it's important. It's important financial benefit, and you can file for a claim as you would any other disability compensation. You can file online at va.gov. You can file the old-fashioned way with paper forms, but it's best advised you get the help of someone with experience, whether it's one of the veteran service organizations like American Legion, VFW, Paralyzed Veterans of America, AMVETS. So there's quite a few veteran service organizations that can help, and there's some accredited lawyers and accredited agents accredited by the VA that can also represent you. So that's the disability compensation side. As I mentioned before, there's the other series of questions about what about health care? Because if someone's developed an illness that is due to the exposure of this contaminated drinking water, the VA ought to be paying for their health care, right? Of course. And there was a law passed, I think it was in 2012, that addressed this. And this actually will include not only veterans, but also out-of-pocket health care costs for family members. Again, emphasizing out-of-pocket health care costs because there might be costs covered by insurance, et cetera. But what's interesting about this is to be eligible for this health care coverage or reimbursement of out-of-pocket health care costs, the list of presumptive conditions is longer. There's 15 conditions. Remember, the list I just gave you for the disability compensation had only 8. And that was enacted by VA regulations. But this statute passed by Congress about 5 years earlier than the regulations had a longer list of 15 conditions. And I'll just read these over to you. I realize you might not have time to write all these down, but go to va.gov and just do a search in the va.gov search engine for Camp Lejeune. And it'll bring all this information up. But the 15 conditions for health care coverage include bladder cancer, breast cancer, esophageal cancer, female infertility, hepatic steatosis, kidney cancer, leukemia, lung cancer, miscarriage, multiple myeloma, myelodysplastic syndromes, neurobehavioral effects, one of the things that's not on the other list, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, renal toxicity, and scleroderma. So the list is longer. We've had guests on our show in the past to discuss the history of the legislation and why the lists are different. Interesting topic. But for right now, that's where the law stands. Again, if you're interested in more information, go to va.gov and do a word search for Camp Lejeune, and it will discuss the specifics on how to apply for disability compensation as well as health care coverage or reimbursement for out-of-pocket health care expenses, including for family members. It'll discuss the documentation you need, and which includes, obviously, certain medical records to show the diagnosis, and it'll tell you what information the VA needs to process the claim as it does for any other claim. Various forms involved. Okay, So that's an ongoing issue, and I think it's remarkable, and a lot of credit goes to Jerry Ensminger and Mike Partain and others, who fought for very hard and for years and lobbied Congress to recognize this issue, and certainly a number of media organizations help bring attention to this issue. But it shows you the positive impact that some veterans and those that are supporting veterans can have. But it takes one heck of a lot of persistence. And I mention this because, as I mentioned at the top of the show, with this open-air burn pits, that's an ongoing issue. And no doubt it's already been an open issue for a number of years. That's the open-air burn pit contamination. And we really haven't seen a tremendous amount of positive development by the VA. So, that being said, I've had a lot of news for you tonight. I hope you have found it informative and interesting. If you'd like to be a guest on our show in the near future, contact me. You can find my contact information on our bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour website. But I'll give it to you right now. My email address is lawcory1@verizon.net. That's LAWCORY, 1@verizon.net. And you can reach me at 813-662-0760. That's 813-662-0760. If you're interested in being a guest on our show, or if you'd like to recommend someone to be a guest on our show, or if you'd like to be an advertiser or sponsor of our show, we certainly would welcome that support as well. And before we wrap up, I want to provide our weekly reminder of a very important program that has a lot of positive and practical impact on veterans. We've had many guests on our show over the past 3 years, including combat veterans who have talked about, you know, the effect on their lives and on their families of serving in combat, long wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and how tough it can go be, and trying to transition from a world of overseas deployment and combat to leaving the service and trying to adapt back to civilian life. It can be very difficult. The VA has a lot of programs. One in particular we like to highlight, and we will again this evening, is the VA's program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans who are having difficulty transitioning back to civilian life. As we know, returning home can be a tough adjustment, and family members can help. So the Coaching into Care basically offers free coaching to help family members help their veteran. Make sense? They have a toll-free number, and its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. It's toll-free number is 1-888-823-7458. Again, this is the VA's Coaching into Care, offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Again, the Coaching into Care program is designed to help family members help their veteran get the help they need. Now, don't confuse that with another important number, which is the Veterans Crisis Line. Tragically, suicide is a serious ongoing problem among veterans, particularly combat veterans. And if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the VA's Veterans Crisis Line can help. That's 1-800-273-8255, which is also the National Crisis Line, 1-800-273-8255. And then press 1. Pressing 1 will get you to the Veterans Crisis Line specifically. So help veterans get the care they need if they're in a crisis of any kind. Again, the Veterans Crisis Line is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Well, I hope it's been an informative program for you. It's time for us to go. I'd like to thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Corey and Hurley Law Group, which provides representation to veterans and disability cases across the country. I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you stay safe and stay healthy. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.